Hello and welcome to the Paid Search Podcast. My name is Chris Schaefer, and today I am speaking to those of you that want to know more about Google Ads shopping. That's right, it is a dedicated day about shopping. I have my friend Joey Bidner with me today. We're going to discuss it. We're going to talk about how you can get started in Google Ads using shopping. Maybe you haven't done it before, maybe you're new, or maybe you just need a refresher on the basics. Joey is going to guide us through a beginner's guide in a standard Google Ads shopping campaign, answer some questions, and even get into some confusing things like differences between Performance Max, when you should use Performance Max, different purposes behind different ad groups, campaigns, how do you know how to use all of it, structure it, bidding types, all going to be answered. So stay tuned on the show. Before I jump into the show, I'll remind you about opteo.com/PSP. That is a special URL that you can go to that will help you not only with your shopping campaigns, but also with your search, your remarketing campaigns, your YouTube. It is a do-it-all online software that you can get more done in Google Ads than any other software out there. And it's like having a really smart Google Ads manager look over your shoulder and help you and point out things. Hey, you're doing that wrong. Hey, did you notice this? But not in that naggy, annoying kind of way. It's a nice kind of thing. So you'll like it. You can try it at Opteo. That's opteo.com/PSP. That's a 2-month free trial. That's twice as long as you'll get if you sign up without this special link. That's opteo.com/PSP for a 2-month free trial of the tool. And without further ado, I'm going to bring in Mr. Joey Bidner. Joey, good to have you back on the show. How are you?
What's up, Chris? Yeah, doing well. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joey does not like to be labeled a shopping specialist. Joey is just a Google Ads all-around smart guy for everything Google Ads. He just happens to know a lot about shopping as well, and I like to have him on the show. So don't put him in a box. He does a lot with Google Ads. We'll talk about more how people can find you in a little bit. But Joey, we're going to skip the normal process of questions and all that stuff. We're going to go straight into this topic. And as you know, I like to have the most efficient 30, 40 minute podcast I possibly can. So who else would I invite but a guy who knows how to just get straight to the meat of things? So let's do it. Let's talk about shopping. So what's the most important thing that people should begin with when they're doing, you know, when they're beginning a shopping campaign, when they're starting, or maybe they're trying to restart? What do they need to know?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to really focus on, and this is also the first thing that I also look at when I'm doing an account audit, even on somebody running a shopping campaign, is to make sure that your conversion tracking is properly set up, because conversion tracking for shopping is very different than conversion tracking for lead generation. It's not only set up differently, but there's also a number of different ways to do it. So if you want the really easy approach, if you're just getting started, you got a lot on your plate, you're just like, I just want to get this thing running and I don't want to spend too much time on each separate element for now. I just want to get out the door and then I can focus on it a bit more later. You can import your GA4 conversion tracking to Google Ads. So if you have GA4 properly set up, which is really easy to do with a Shopify account, you just go into your, you just plug it in through the settings tab. It will automatically configure your purchase action. Then in Google Ads, you can import that conversion from GA4. When you link GA4 in Google Ads, you just go to your conversion tab, create a new conversion, and select the import button. And then you can import GA4. Now, I say this though with an asterisk, because although the GA4 import is the easiest to do, it is not the most accurate. So GA4 conversion action is notorious for leaving a lot off the table. Although you assume that because it's Google hosted, they would be the best at attributing conversions back to Google, they haven't figured out GA4 yet. And I would say GA4 does leave off sometimes up to about a quarter to a third of your conversions that you're getting unattributed, meaning they don't get imported to Google. So if you want to go really the most secure route of conversion tracking, then I would recommend going the slightly more complicated route of doing your Google Ads conversion tracking code. Now, this one, it's a lot more complicated because it's not as easy as just, you know, taking the code from your conversion action and putting it on your checkout page. You do need like a special piece of code that you usually get from the Google Ads tag team, which you need to schedule a meeting with. They give you a tag that you can then install, and or you could, you know, contact somebody like me. I can help you install it. But I did just want to identify those two, the two differences of GA4, easy, Google Ads conversion tracking, harder to set up, but more accurate. And then one more option, if you use a feed management software, sometimes they come with conversion actions that can be imported, and those are also more accurate than GA4. We're not going to talk too much about feed management because we covered that in episode 366. So if you want to hear more about that, go to episode 366, but know that some of those feed management softwares come with some really high quality conversion actions that will get auto populated in your account.
Yeah. And is there any reason why, do you know, it's that the GA4 is not as accurate? Does it have a bad habit of attributing things that are wrong? They've been attributed to the wrong type of click, or they just miss it entirely?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is like a way more complex one that like an engineer could better answer, because it has to do with the new regulations of privacy. And in order to capture that data that's now blocked, we need to layer in new pieces of code, which GA4 standard doesn't capture. Now, they do have areas in the platform where you can start layering in those things, like, you know, GA4 enhanced conversions, which I actually just learned how to do it the other day, and it's complicated. You really need to get your developer on board to send you pieces of information that you then plug into GA4 in certain areas. And, you know, it's getting there. Like everything that's new, like GA4 is rather new, it's pretty clunky still. So,
I remember back in the day when, you know, conversion tracking in Google Ads was just getting started, and the complication of getting conversion tracking, just normal conversion tracking, set up on Google Ads was a massive headache to get the code and everything. So yeah, that makes sense. Hopefully it'll be easier and more thorough. Now, one thing I'll say as far as the conversion tracking, does it make sense? I mean, I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm leading you into a easy softball here. Does it make sense to add things like add to cart or other conversion actions beyond just purchase?
Only as observational. I do like to add, and GA4, for example, will also have those built into it, and you can import those as well. But I never have add to cart set as an actual conversion action. It's nice to have observational, so you can see people's, like, you know, journey in interacting with your ads. But I also turn off all those other things like get directions and phone calls, and just purchases with values are what's driving my conversion actions.
Okay, good. Yeah. So really streamlined. So when it comes to getting your conversion set up, you want purchase. You want a purchase conversion, which has, this is the important part, a transaction value assigned to it. So that's dynamically assigned. So when someone purchases for $300, that $300 purchase is assigned to that conversion, so that you can then manage to your ROAS, your conversion value over cost. So if you're in Google Ads shopping, you don't want to manage on cost per conversion. You want to manage on profitability, which has to do with how much are you spending and how much are you making. So that's really, I think, the basics. Does that about cover it for conversion tracking and all that?
And I think one more little thing to say is the only time where, you know, the value doesn't really matter as much, and you do see this sometimes, is if you sell a product that only has the same value across all your products, or if you only sell one product, let's say, then it doesn't really matter if you have value associated to it. You could actually just do ones and zeros, conversion or no conversion, and optimize to cost per conversion. But that's the only case. If you have products with different values, you want to be optimizing to ROAS.
Right. And even if you did, you know, even if you did have products that were just one price, what you're missing out on by not having that transaction value is being able to use ROAS-based bidding. I mean, you could import that there as just a static number, but you know, there's always situations where the rule is broken. You know, somebody's purchasing something that's, you know, they're purchasing multiple, you know, and it only tracks as one conversion. There's a lot of things there that could cause some issues there. So I would say, you know, dynamic transactional value numbers assigned to each conversion is definitely the best situation, because ideally gold standard for a shopping campaign is to have target ROAS that takes care of it for you. It manages the bidding based on profitability, which is the ideal.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Okay, so big question here. I know what my answer is with shopping. With search. But with shopping, when it comes to campaigns and ad groups, you know, it doesn't really, the same rules don't apply for shopping campaigns as it does to search campaigns. So what's the idea behind campaign, ad group structure? When do you need to use them? When do you not need to use them? How's that work?
Yeah, I like to have really simple structures, especially at the start. And I usually will segment my ad groups by product type, right? So kind of by like the structure of your website. If you sell, let's say you sell lighting fixtures, right? And you've got chandeliers, you've got sconce lights, you've got linear lights, you've got table lamps. I have an ad group for each one of those in one campaign. And it's something that's very easy to segment. You know, you go to your product groups in your ad group. Now, and there's one little trap door I do want to mention. When you go to your product groups, you'll see that all products tab. You click the pencil icon, right? And it shows you different options to segment your product. You're going to go to product type. You'll see all your different types, you know, chandeliers, table lights, blah, blah, blah. You select chandeliers because this is your chandelier ad group. When you click save, I want you to go back into your product group, because Google will have the product group you've selected active, but then for reasons unknown, they still leave all products active as a line item. So even though you selected your product group, make sure you go back and pause all products. Otherwise, it's segmenting just for observation and it will still feature all your products. So I do this for every category. Now, it's different for every business. Let's say you sell one product. You only sell chandeliers, but you sell five different brands of chandeliers, and each brand kind of has its own, you know, search intent, its own value. Then you'd segment your ad groups by brand, right?
Okay.
Yeah. But I like to keep it pretty simple of just one campaign, an ad group for every product type. I'll then segment by campaign if you're targeting different countries often. So if you're targeting US and Canada, right? Instead of just lumping them both into one campaign, because Canada has sometimes a completely different CPC. They'll have a different expected competitive market because it's a lot smaller. I'll set a Canadian campaign and a US campaign with the same segmentation. And then you can choose how much you want to spend in each country, which is usually different. And beyond that, the only other time I'll segment by campaign is if you have a real stark difference between your product categories. Like, for example, in that same example of the lights, let's say you sell lights and you sell furniture, right? So you sell couches, chairs, desks alongside all those lights, and they have got very different cart values. They've got a completely different, you know, value to the client, to your business of what you sell. Then I'll create a campaign for furniture that's got ad groups segmented by every type of furniture, and a campaign for lights with ad groups segmented by lights. And that's only in the case where you really have like a lot of different product types for furniture, a lot of different product types by lights. You know, to have one campaign that'll maybe have 20, 30 different ad groups versus two campaigns that'll have 10 to 15 ad groups, and you can, you know, choose how much you want to spend on your furniture versus your lights, that's when I'll also segment by campaign.
Okay. That's really interesting. It's good confirmation that what you're talking about is universal across Google Ads, because my standard is type and value. Whenever I break out things in ad groups, and that's essentially, you said the same thing.
Yeah.
And it sounds like when you break the type mold, when you go outside of just having type, is as soon as there's a different value difference between these different types. So, I mean, yeah, that makes sense. So, I mean, just to restate, Joey, and tell me if I'm wrong here. I mean, it sounds like if you sell shoes, you might just break it out by all the different brands of shoes, or you might just have running and casual and leather and things like that, all kind of broken out just based on how you structure your website, you know, just different types. But as soon as there's an outlier, as soon as maybe you also sell these highly specialized running shoe for track stars or something, and these are very important, and you want to consume a higher percentage of the market of these, now you've defined value outside of type. So it's going to make more sense for you to put that in its own ad group, simply because, not because it's that different of a type, but because it's a different value apart from the type. So does that about cover it? Does that seem simple enough?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. Right as I was kind of explaining this, I was realizing that it totally aligned with your same theory of that you were talking about, I think, in a couple episodes ago, of just how you segment by value sometimes. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the same methodology.
Good. I didn't really know if that was true, but I'm glad to confirm that, because I assume that's the same. I just don't do as much shopping, so I don't usually structure the same. I didn't think that I needed to structure the same way, but it's usually what I did anyway. But great. Okay. So that's good. So now we've got our structure figured out. We've got a campaign, conversions discussed. I mean, the big thing is usually you would talk about keywords, targeting, you know, but we don't have keywords. We don't get to choose where we show up. So all we have is bidding. I mean, all we can do is adjust numbers. So let's talk about bidding strategy. I mean, where do we start? What do you think a beginner shopping campaign should begin with?
So typically when I start, especially if it's a brand new account, Google won't even actually allow you to do automated bidding. It'll say you don't have enough conversions yet. For shopping, they'll do that. Yeah. So I often will still start on manual to establish, okay, what is my floor and ceiling of the bids in order for me to get also an even distribution of budget spent among my ad groups. And then once some conversion actions trickle through, I will switch to automated, and typically target ROAS bidding. And I will, and we've mentioned this in previous episodes, and it's a counterintuitive one, but this is a method that is not just practiced by me, but practiced by many. I will start that target ROAS bid at 40%. So a very low number, because you want to allow.
Sorry. I mean, you didn't just say low. You didn't just say below one. You said 40%.
40%. Because, and this is the big difference. In shopping, we don't have the option that you see in other campaign types like Performance Max or Search, where we don't have maximized conversion value, where it's taking away a goal saying, I need to hit this number for you, the algorithm, to spend my full budget. Setting it to 40% is basically saying maximize conversion value, and you've got full rein to do your learning to look up and down the funnel. If you start at a 200% ROAS and your campaign is new, it doesn't have a 200% yet, or even 100%, it's just not going to spend. And man, this one hit me by surprise when I started using it. I've had many accounts where I set a 40% target ROAS and it returns me like a 300%. It's not letting Google off the hook saying, okay, Google, I only want you to make me 40 cents to the dollar. And it goes, okay, that's what I'll get you. It just takes off the shackles, allows it to do its learning. And then I will crawl up the ROAS target as I need to based off of the return, where, you know, if it's getting conversions, but it's not making what my benchmarks are, then I'll raise it to 100, 150, as long as it's still able to spend its full budget. If you increase it too fast and you're not spending your budget, you got to lower it back down. And if your feed is set up properly, which again, go back to episode 366 and listen to feed management, because all of this is determined on how good your feed is. Doesn't matter how good any of this is set up. If your feed is not set up properly, your account will struggle. So if your feed is set up properly, The algorithm, Target ROAS does do a good job to find you the right traffic, but your feed has to reflect. Those are your keywords, your title, your product categories. Those are your keywords. So if you set those up and you scale your bidding strategy slowly and appropriately, it gets to where you want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the, it's important to emphasize that, because we're not talking about, you know, the other side of the coin. In Google Ads, there's only two sides of the coin. There's the bidding and then there's the targeting. That's all there is, you know? Mm-hmm. And in shopping, you only get like one shot to get the right targeting, you know? And then if it doesn't work, you need to go back to the drawing board and redo your titles and all that kind of stuff. You know, I've seen campaigns that have poor targeting, and no matter what happens, I just keep getting the wrong traffic. It just keeps sending me the wrong kind of stuff. So it's definitely important there to get that right, because you can't outbid bad targeting. Because you're getting the wrong traffic.
I love that. I am going to write that one down to say what I need in my back pocket. Can't outbid bad targeting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I see that a lot. I know that immediately off the top of my head, because I just see it so often. People are like, Chris, tell me about manual bidding. And I jump into the account and I'm like, oh, no. You're not ready for manual bidding. You have the wrong keywords.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely the core problem itself.
And I guess I know we're referring back to episode 366, but I'll give a couple just quick notes on what a healthy feed looks like if you have one. One, your titles. Google gives you 150 characters to put in your titles. Use them, right? And don't just put the titles that you have of your products on your store. You want to have a rich title that has all the different elements of what somebody might search for to trigger your ad. Not to say that you're keyword stuffing, but you know, you want, like, I'll give you an example. This is an example I've used before for patio umbrellas. I have a client that sells patio umbrellas. You know, a lot of people search for patio umbrellas that are really good for high wind. So we put, like, you know, patio, the category of patio umbrella, which is a cantilever umbrella, and I'll put in the title, great for high wind, or wind resistant. Yeah. I'll put wind resistant in the title.
Oh, nice.
And that allows that tells Google, okay, this is a wind resistant, mold resistant, all this stuff that's in the title. And then the description, Google gives us 5,000 characters to load in these descriptions. Go to ChatGPT and write a paragraph. Yeah, write a paragraph on every feature that your product relates to, fixes, helps. Like, you want to really load that up as well, because Google is looking at all of that. So I'll just say titles, descriptions, those are the two big areas that you want to not just take directly from your website of what you have. You know, optimize those to get in front of the traffic you want.
Yeah. Oh, good suggestion there. You know, I had never really thought about that. You know, I'm gonna steal some that idea there for my back pocket when someone asks me that. You know, like, they're like, well, I don't know, you know, my descriptions, I don't know how to say it. And I'm like, there we go. That's a great one. ChatGPT to start bulking that out with more keywords, more content. Because you only have so many ways to convince Google the kind of traffic that you want. You know, and descriptions and title is it. And if you're like, well, I can only say this with two sentences, I don't know what else to say. Boy, you're really hamstringing yourself there.
Yeah. And if I can give one more example to just kind of really hit this home for the descriptions, because I think that's an area where, you know, it's easy in the title to hit the key features, but you can only say so much. In the descriptions, you really want to get into the user benefits. So for example, I've got a client that sells boat wash. Okay. It's eco-friendly boat wash. And what do you use boat wash for? You use it to wash off mold, wash off barnacles. You use it to wash off all these different things. So I told the client, in our descriptions, I want a paragraph about how your product removes barnacle. I want a paragraph about how your product removes mold, how your product can be washed away safely into the water, which is one of their key benefits. I want there's another one like decarbonizer. It's another like boat wash thing. Like some people search for boat wash for decarbonization. I want a paragraph about that. And you put all that in, and then you put all that in your description, and Google can start matching you to those searches.
Yeah. Great. That's awesome. That's awesome. Joey. So we've got that. I mean, I feel like are we running out of ideas there? I mean, you've hit us with all the conversion stuff, the bidding, the targeting. I mean, we went beyond what we were talking about. What else is on our list? What's the next thing?
Okay, so the next thing that comes up is how should we approach remarketing with shopping? Because this is very different, right? There's two types of remarketing. There's your standard remarketing, which is, you know, what you have your responsive display ads, you know, where you've got you've got a series of images that with headlines that go to your homepage. These are great for messaging, right? Messaging your value proposition, messaging that you have a sale. I want to push the word like key value proposition messaging. But what it doesn't do is follow the customer around the internet with your product. Right. And this is where dynamic remarketing comes in. And dynamic remarketing is when, you know, it's all happened to us. You visit that backpack on a website, the backpack follows you around, and it's the exact search listing that when you click that display ad that shows the backpack, shows the price, it takes you to the backpack.
Yeah.
So dynamic remarketing, and I like to have both. That's the thing. You've got one for messaging, one for product serving. And because dynamic remarketing doesn't do a lot with messaging, so it's nice to have both. Dynamic remarketing, though, it is hard to set up because you need, although it makes it seem like you can just press a button in Merchant Center, there's a setup dynamic remarketing. You need to install a special piece of code in order for the variables of the product from Merchant Center to be pulled back into Google Ads. So you are not setting up, you are not running dynamic remarketing unless you have installed these very special codes. If you want to get those set up, I recommend reaching out to the Google Tag team. They can help you set that up. You can do so by just going to the help section, say, hey, I'd like to schedule a meeting with the tag team for dynamic remarketing, or you can reach out to me. I can also help you set that up. I've got the codes for Shopify stores. Outside that, you'll have to talk to the tag team, but it's important to know the difference between dynamic remarketing and standard remarketing.
Oh, that's okay. So I often say that the best investment that you can make in Google Ads to actually get something for free is remarketing. I would be perfectly fine if I had 10,000 impressions in my remarketing campaign and never got a click, because that's the one time Google gives me something for free and I don't have to pay for. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's quite a value to be able to put that there, even if I get no conversions, nothing, just the impressions, just knowing that I have that creepy guy with a sign following people right behind him saying, remember this backpack? Remember this backpack? You know, remember it keeps things on top of mind, which is really valuable, especially when you have shopping campaigns, e-commerce kind of stuff where people can just be shopping and looking and they forget, you know, they did it in the quick 5 minutes they had, they were looking around, then they closed the phone and they forget they were looking it up. So really, really valuable. So I think that's a good one. Joey, I personally have made it a life goal never to say the short term of performance max. So you are free to say that, but I don't say the abbreviated performance max term.
I think that's up.
Oh, here we go. I don't say it. So go ahead. I feel like that's probably where we're headed at this point. Is that where we need to talk about performance max?
We need to talk about some PMAX. Yes, we do.
All right.
So performance max, this is where I feel like majority of the questions that I see are when and why should I run PMAX, right?
Yeah.
So I was one of the early adopters of performance max where, and I've seen a lot of success with it, but I find I'm using it a lot less now, to be honest. And when I do use it for shopping, I'm only using one version of it, and it's called a feed only performance max campaign. I think we've spoken about this a bit before, but feed only is when you do not have images, you do not have headlines, you are limiting the performance max campaign from doing search and display, like standard search and display, and YouTube, because I find like if you want to run search for your shopping, just running a search campaign is way better because search requires a different approach. We're going to get into that a little bit later if we still have time, but there's a very specific approach to search. So I don't like telling performance max to say, okay, put me on the search network, because it doesn't work the same way shopping does. So when it comes to performance max, I like to have a feed only performance max campaign. And all that means is you do not add any assets, and you only add your product feed. And you even have to, in order for it to save properly, you need to remove the final URL. Once you remove the final URL from your asset group, it will allow you to save. And then you basically will structure the asset groups the same way we structured our search, our shopping ad groups. You've got an asset group for each one of your product types. And the reason this can be beneficial is, and it only works in this case, you must have dynamic remarketing set up and properly working, because what a feed-only performance max will do is it will take your, it will serve in standard shopping and dynamic remarketing in the same campaign. And then when you add in some audience signals of what your customer is like, it will use your dynamic feed and do a little bit of outbound. So if somebody is searching for that boat cleaner, yes, your through your Performance Max campaign, it will appear in the search network. It will dynamically remarket to them. But that person who has not interacted with your ad yet, but Google knows they own a boat, and you tell the campaign that you want to target people who own boats, they will see your ad appear in the display network as an acquisition source. So we'll do a little bit of outbound display, but primarily shopping and dynamic remarketing. Okay. And I have seen it work well. You know, it does work well. And you know, there is a new feature in Google Ads now where you can do an experiment. You can A/B test against a standard shopping campaign and Performance Max. So you can run that experiment. Now, in tests, what's that?
You have to start with the standard is what I've found, right? You can't take a Performance Max and test against a standard and downgrade. Am I wrong?
I don't remember.
I've only seen it one way, because I don't see that Google would really want to incentivize people to test a Performance Max against a standard if they already have a Performance Max. Just a hunch there, but
you could be right. You could be right. I'm not sure. But I have used that function a few times, and in the last few months I've tested it a few times, and in both cases, I did it in two different cases, there was no real conclusive result, to be honest. Yeah. They both came in with a very similar return on ad spend. The intent was close to the same. And in the end, it was like, well, if I'm going to choose one, I'd rather choose standard shopping, because you get more insights. So data. Performance Max, I find, is okay, but it's no mover and a shaker. And if you're going to use it, feed only, and you need dynamic remarketing. If you don't have dynamic remarketing, it is a big old-fashioned waste of time.
Yeah, great point. And one thing I want to clarify, because we use terms sometimes just off the cuff. I want to clarify, because you said it, but when you say feed-only Performance Max, that's not a different type of Performance Max.
Right.
What Joey's talking about is the fact of how it's set up. It's still a normal Performance Max. You're just depriving it from manually created assets with the audiences and all these other things that you can put in. So you're just adding a feed and then deleting all the other settings that it's trying to force you to do, and only going with the feed. So if you're looking, you're like, I want to set up Performance Max feed only. There's no option for that. You just set it up normal and then delete everything else out, and you have a feed only Performance Max.
Yeah. And thank you for clarifying that. That's exactly it.
Okay. Okay. So Joey, I'm learning some stuff here. This is great. I appreciate you sharing this. One of the things that kind of, you know, surprises me the most is that two things. One is the 40% target ROAS thing to begin with. I mean, I'm really curious to try that, because I'm very often the kind of manager that just picks like 100%, you know, 100% targeting on target ROAS, or 150. Just kind of pull that out of the sky. You're kind of like, I'll just throw one, you know. And I'm curious what happens if I give it more wiggle room there. I think that's really interesting. And then the next is, from your testing, I mean, I'm thrilled to hear that Performance Max doesn't necessarily just win the battle every time. It makes sense to me that it doesn't, because in reality, it's just supplementing display and other assets like that with shopping. And I'm glad to hear that it doesn't win out. I'm not surprised that it doesn't, but I'm glad to hear you confirm that, simply because I don't have a lot of faith in new client acquisition, new sales acquisition through display campaigns that's only feeding, just feed data to it. I mean, it's not a surprise that it doesn't do well, and yet it's sold as if it is a, an amazing solution for everyone. You know, sure, it can be an amazing solution, but definitely not for everyone, and definitely not a winner every time.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I do want to add as an asterisk there is, in the cases that it does like smash the ROAS through the roof and it's like beaten everything else, PMax can also be very misleading, where a lot of that traffic can just be return customers. It will lean into the low-hanging fruit and will kind of just gobble up that attribution that other channels are kind of warmed up. And when you look at the longevity of a business, what matters is like new customer acquisition, not just repeat. So that's for another topic. But I do find in the cases where it does really crush it, it's misleading data.
Yeah. And for me, I will always sacrifice maybe a little bit better target ROAS, a little bit better ROAS. And I'll give that to Performance Max. Sure. Okay. Maybe you can get me a 2.3 and I can only get like a 2.1. Sorry, I'm using weird abbreviations. You know, a 210% ROAS versus Performance Max that only gets a 230%. And so maybe I'm taking a little bit of a cut there, but I would rather have the search term data. I'd rather have the metrics and the ability to split things out, the ability to create, specific ad groups and be able to see what that ad group is doing as opposed to another one, to look at those metrics. I'd rather have that rather than having a non-transparent campaign that supposedly does better that I have. Tell you what, I have trust issues. I have trust issues with Performance Max, and I'm not afraid to say it. So,
and I'll say one thing too, is when it comes to standard shopping versus Performance Max, like, I love the fact that a standard shopping campaign, you can adjust the target ROAS at the ad group level. That is huge. And in Performance Max, you can't. You can set out your asset groups by your product types, but they're all rolled into one target ROAS. And that, for me, is an issue. So
that's a great point. Yeah.
So
yeah,
good point. I know we are running short on time, and I do want to save some time for search.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I want to talk about search in conjunction with shopping, because this is probably one of the areas that I see the most issues with when I audit accounts. People approaching search the same, people will try to get the same result from search as they do from shopping, and that's the issue. Yeah. Because the benefit of a shopping campaign, right, when you bucket your products by your ad groups, each product is still goes to its own URL. It's kind of like each product is almost like its own little mini ad group. When someone clicks on that backpack, they go to that backpack's URL. In search, each ad group can only have one URL, right? So you can't have really granular searches going to general pages, because that's kind of that's what shopping is for, right? That's what shopping is for. So I never really like really granular, a real granular approach in search, because one, it never really works. If you do try to break out ad groups for a blue backpack, a red backpack, a black backpack, you know, because keywords don't work like they used to, the ad group for the blue backpack will get searches for the red backpack in it, right? And to be honest, I say, don't even try. Shopping is there for that reason. For search, I like to take a much higher funnel approach, where people just searching for a backpack store. Straight up, like, that's what I use search for. Use it for your category of store, because before people know exactly what they want, they often will search for the category of the store. Lighting stores in Canada, online lighting stores, those are my search campaigns. Now, sometimes I will go to DSA. That's for maybe another conversation, because that's a Pandora's box of a topic. But to keep things simple, I will use search to facilitate my shopping campaigns a little bit higher funnel of people searching for your store's category. And that's it.
Yeah. That's Joey, very well said. I completely agree. And just to throw a little bit of, you know, I don't, somebody out there, Joey, I don't believe you. Why? I think I can do it better. The reason shopping will beat you every time and why search won't work like you think, well, I can put negatives for all the different colors of the backpack and I can force Google to get me blue. I'm like, okay, great, sure. The reason you'll lose and the reason it won't work is because shopping has lower CPCs. And you could get the same conversion rate on shopping and do an amazingly high ROAS return, do great, but put that into search with the same conversion rate, maybe even a little bit better, you could have double the conversion rate. It still won't work because the difference in shopping and search CPCs are so drastically different. We're talking 30 cents versus, you know, maybe $3. Try and beat that with a conversion rate. You're going to need 30% conversion rates to be able to make that work. I mean, it has to be really high conversion rates. So, you know, Joey, I think that's good advice because people think they can outdo shopping campaigns with a really tight, smart search campaign. No, you really can't because you're not working with the same engine. You know, you're not working with the same CPC as you are with shopping. So, great stuff, Joey. Did we hit it all? Did we get through our list?
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers all of it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Joey, I give you the floor here. Obviously, everyone wants to know, how do they get in touch with Joey? Where can they find you?
Yeah, if you just want to, you know, keep tabs on stuff that I'm learning, I am pretty active on LinkedIn where I like to just post the things that I'm learning. If you like to keep tabs on some of the cutting edge, I post a lot there. But if you do need help with Google Ads management or some consulting or an audit, just reach out to me either through LinkedIn or through my website, joeybidner.com. I'd be happy to speak with you.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Joey. Everybody, you can find both of our websites in the description on wherever you're listening or watching. And I appreciate all of you being here. I will be back. I'm sure Joey will be back too. So stay tuned for that. But I'll be back next week. Thanks so much.